Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark. And today I'm joined by guest Digby Lee. Digby, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. Glad to be here.
Could you give folks a little bit of background about who you are and what you do?
I'm a lawyer. I have a law firm with 30 people in total. I'm in probably practice law for close to 40 years now and done it a lot of different ways, from being in a large firm with 100 lawyers and a partner there to having a partnership and having grown that. And now I have my own firm that I've grown over the last 15 years.
Wow, that's great. So all sorts of different types of experience. Do you have a particular kind of specialization or specialty or kind of clients that you serve in your current incarnation?
Yeah, right now our firm would focus on helping people in business. You know, in our world, that's called corporate commercial area practice. We also do a lot of other solicitors type work like real estate and commercial lending and estate planning. So on the solicitor side, not so much the litigation side, but I have a huge history of doing insolvency work. And so that's got a lot of litigation to it. So I've pretty well seen the full ambit of the practice of law in the close to 40 years.
Amazing. Okay, great. So that I think is going to set a really good context for the main purpose of this phone call, which is that you offer fixed fees.
Yeah, so
and you even have a name for it, Frank Fee TM.
Exactly. What I would describe it as agreed upon pricing upfront. Mm-hmm. So it is not necessarily just fixed fee. It could be a periodic fee, like a monthly fee, could be a success fee, but most often it would be a lump sum fixed fee agreed to in advance.
That's amazing. So as I'm sure a lot of people know, anyone listening to this knows, I mean, based on the title, that I am not a fan of ditching billing hourly. And of all the people I've worked with, because I've talked to people from all sorts of professions who traditionally bill hourly, of all of them, I get the most resistance from lawyers or attorneys, and they say, oh, well, that's all well and good for software developers or designers, or that's all well and good for everyone else, but it's not possible here. And the funny thing is, I get that from lawyers. I also get it from everyone else, but in a lesser degree. So I love when I see an example of someone who is using a different model, not billing by the hour, and, you know, wanted to have you talk about your experience doing that.
Yeah, maybe let me go back a little bit, not too far, not into my childhood at least. I'll go back to maybe 3 or 4 years ago, having practiced law for a long time and having seen the interactions between clients and lawyers. I made up my mind quite a while ago that I really thought the industry was ripe for change, and particularly when it came to pricing. And I'll get into it probably a little bit later, as you peel the onion away, you find out in how many ways, you know, taking a different approach than billing by the hour really is a benefit for so many of the stakeholders. Mm. So it's funny, my son, who was a lawyer, is now transitioned into other things. That was the thing that really got him. And he pulled up recently a memo that I did, like I was making this proclamation to myself that the industry must change. I'm going to lead the way. And of course, it got filed. And then I was coming back from sunnier places than Vancouver in March, I think it was 16th of last year, just as COVID had fully set in. And I was sitting on the plane and I literally said to myself, what better time than now to create a bit of certainty for clients in such an uncertain climate? So it just was the one catalyst that put me over. And then the journey since then has been quite the journey.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So to kind of the first thing that we did is we realized that we did what probably a lot of lawyers that in the legal industry, you know, it's known as alternative fee arrangements, and there are law firms that are doing it. But what I was finding and what we first did is we looked at at how we were going to go about it. And we started to create pricing guidelines. Mm-hmm. You know, for standardized work, we could actually attach numbers to that. For more complex work, like M&A work, we attached variables, if you will. Like, if this is the case, then it's going to be more expensive. But we had a very, you know, what I have found as I've watched a lot what's going on in the last, now getting close to a year, is that what is happening in the industry in the alternative fee arrangement is what law firms are doing is they're trying to estimate the amount of time that they're going to put into a project, and then they're just agreeing that that will be the fee. Mm-hmm. And so we started off down that path, probably like most things in my life, not always knowing where I was going to end up, but mm-hmm. being quite prepared to jump out of the plane and see if the parachute would open as I was going to the ground. And so we did that, and that took a long time and a lot of work through with our staff to create pricing guidelines. And we started by dividing the work that we did into types of projects that we commonly did. So we took from three or four areas of practice, we converted that into, say 40 or 50 types of projects. And so, and then we started to, open up our files so that we could track things by those types of projects. So why don't I take a quick pause and just see how I'm doing so far before I finish the journey.
Yeah, that's great. So what you're describing is the way that most people go about it at first when the light bulb goes on and they're like, wait a second, I don't like the kind of customer experience or client experience I'm creating with this billing in arrears potentially forever type of approach, and I want to give. I like your distinction. I want to agree upon a price in advance. It might not be fixed. It might be recurring or something like that, but it creates predictability and it allows them to make an accurate buying decision. Because if without that, they can't decide to go forward with you without some kind of number in their head. And when you don't agree to a price and instead, like most hourly billers, you only provide an estimate, then they treat the estimate like a price. And then if you end up going over, which regrettably is the most common situation, perhaps the lion's share of the time you go over the estimate. And as you go farther and farther over the estimate, you are eating up what they would have enjoyed as their profit margin, whether that is a dollar amount or an emotional profit margin. They feel like if they had known it was going to be this much, they would have made a different decision way back when. And that was the feeling that kicked me out of hourly billing. I couldn't stand that. And so then what do you do? Well, a lot of people don't immediately jump to a value-based approach. They jump to a fixed time and materials approach. And you can tell me what happened. I'm curious to hear what happened when you tried that first, because it's a very common first step. With software development, which I would consider to be on the complex end of things, you know, maybe I've never done a merger and acquisition, but it's complicated and there's a lot of unknowns. The client is heavily involved. It's very collaborative. It's impossible to know everything up front. So what typically happens is when people say, oh, I'm going to give you a fixed price based on what I suspect are the time and materials required to do this project with you, they don't ask the right questions and therefore always underestimate the number of hours. And therefore they set the prices way too low and then they feel like they're getting burned or they regret it or they start to resent the customer or they start to hate me because I'm the one that tricked them into trying this. So I'm curious to hear what was your experience when you switched to fixed fee based on time and materials, if you saw similar kind of outcomes.
Yeah, so we already probably 90% of our bills were already fixed fee. And before we went to Frank Fee, and about 60% of our revenue. And that's because there's a lot of standardized types of projects that you can estimate the resources that you need to complete them. As examples, a real estate transaction and incorporation of a company. We even could do before complex tax-driven reorganizations because it's really just the compilation of a number of steps. So we already had the mentality that we didn't necessarily bill just by the amount of resources that we allocated to it. So that really helped. And We knew that, we knew that it wasn't just going to be a matter of estimating how long it was going to take to do it. So we're in a good position to then move forward from having created these pricing guidelines. Some of them work well for very standardized projects. I would say if you talk to most attorneys or lawyers, they will tell you that an M&A transaction and trying to predict how that's going to go is virtually impossible. And that's why you get so much pushback on converting from the hourly billing model. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge culture in our industry, like in everybody's industry, or a lot of industries, I should say, where you don't want to work for free. You don't want to be underwater. And dealing with that cultural shift is, I knew going into it would be one of the most important things. So before we launched, I knew we needed to create the pricing guidelines because we would need more resources to price as we move forward. Mm-hmm. But then I'd say there's two secret sauces for what we did. The first one, as you've already mentioned, was we gave it a name. We actually went to a branding company. They were terrific. We went through 30 or 40 names. And then we picked a name that really fit our culture. If you go on our website, you'll see we have a smile on our face. We do serious work, but we try not to take ourselves too seriously. So creating a name that would be a bit memorable, would have people wonder a little bit about it before, we thought that was perfect. And it's worked out. I mean, I have clients now that come to me and say, Digby, can I get the Frank fee on that? So it actually has become a thing. And I just chuckle when I think about it. But it also was a little bit about not dipping your toe in, which is one of the hardest things, and takes a real entrepreneurial spirit, because dipping your toe in would say, well, we have fixed fee alternatives. I'll do that on a fixed fee. But we decided to jump in the deep end and say, no, we're in. We're going to give it a name, and that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of it. And I think it was important internally as well as externally. And not that there aren't, hiccups, and not that it isn't, it's not easy, but we are all in. We declared we're all in. We gave it a name. So that was part of the secret sauce. And then the other part that was really important, and I think it's the kind of the critical difference in how we've approached it, is taking a bit of a Billy Beane data analytics approach at the back end. Mm-hmm. So knew that to be successful, we needed to create a culture of creating great systems and having optimal resource allocation. And, a lot of, when I've listened to you, Jonathan, it's often about an individual and trying to price, but I've got 30 people and everybody's got to go through this and everybody's got to be part of it. So it really required good systems as well as just a I'm going to do it mentality.
Sure.
And so what we've done there is we've created an outlier approach. So we've kept recording time costs, because if you in the legal industry, time cost reflects effectively paying someone's salary, covering the overhead, and creating a profit. And so we've utilized the hourly billing rates that we have, but really as a management tool. So at the back end, every month we create a list of outliers over a certain threshold in dollars and over a certain percentage in terms of what we would call billing realization rate. Mm-hmm. Call it when the resources that you have to devote to something are not as, not as much as you would expect to generate the price that you generate. And we also look at the downside of that. And we create a monthly report, all the people that had significant input into that debrief in an automated way now. So they talk about why did it go well? Why didn't it go well? How are they? And so out of that, they make commitments to work on the system, and that turns into a report to management that then can filter down. So
can you make that a little bit more concrete? I get what you're saying at an abstract level, I'm curious if you could kind of, what's an example of an outlier? Are you basically just saying that somebody worked 100 hours more on something than you expected them to? like something just took a long time?
So I'll put it into the math of it, which is, so if I was to work on a file and I was to bill for all the time that was expended and the other people, and say you added all that up and it came to $25,000, but the actual fee that we'd agreed to came to $35,000, that would be a positive outlier. Mm-hmm. Now on the flip side, or pardon me, $25,000 worth of cost for $35,000 worth of fee. So that's a positive, didn't have to allocate as much resources as we would normally if we were just billing by the hour. On the other side, if we did something that say generated $25,000 of fee, but the time cost was $35,000, it would be an outlier on the other side. Is that?
So, is the cost input there what they would have billed out at, or are you dividing their salary by the number of hours you expect them to work?
Yeah. So we haven't taken it to the level of actually looking at their salary and their allocation of overhead, because if we take an approach of using our standard hourly rates, it really does account for someone working the amount of time we think they're going to work in a year. It really does allocate. It does include an element of their salary, an element of covering overhead, and an element of profit. So we haven't had to adjust to just looking at salaries and overhead.
Yeah, I get that. It's a pretty good proxy. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge believer that if we create the culture of continuous learning, a loop with that, then we're going to create great systems, and we're going to have optimal resource allocation. And in the legal industry, that probably means having the person that can, best do a job at the lowest cost for us doing what they can. And lawyering, if you will, as opposed to keyboarding in information when that's done by others.
Okay. Yeah. That totally makes sense. And I for people who are longtime listeners of the show, I have a little bit more cavalier approach to it. When people tell me that they're still tracking hours, I say, well, your prices are too low. Because imagine if at the end of the month, most projects you would have billed out at 25,000, but you got 250,000. I imagine at a certain point you'd be like, we can stop tracking hours. Like, I'm not worried about the profitability because we're wildly profitable. Do you think you would still track hours if you're 10xing your billables, what you would have billed out?
I think from a management point of view, you would, because if you're 10 times, you'd want to be 20 times. and those are large numbers and they would scare clients away. But I think you, from a management point of view, I think it's important. And because, as an example, we can look at different areas of law and some are much more profitable than others. Mm-hmm. And so that's important information in deciding on taking on new tasks. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of obvious, though? Like, do you really need to have all of your employees track their hours to detect the most profitable areas?
I'd still say yes. Now, bear in mind, we launched on Tuesday after Labor Day. We're now 5 or 6 months into it or whatever. And so we're learning a lot and we're constantly. What I do know is that our profitability is going in the right direction, even at this early stage. And I'd say culturally, there's been a big shift at the beginning of this calendar year to working more on systems so that mm-hmm. we can become even more profitable.
Yeah, I don't mean to push back too much. I actually like this because I know that especially when you've got a culture shift in a large, 30-person organization, people are, your COO or whoever, your CFO or whoever's sort of in charge of optimizing things and yourself, you're going to want to have some kind of canary in the coal mine, some kind of guardrails and metrics, a dashboard that you can look at to be like, okay, we're not just trusting our gut instinct here. Like, we can see that had we done these in a hourly billable type of engagement, we would have made less money, like full stop. Plus, let's flip it to the client side. What's the client experience like now? Are clients who are paying $35,000 instead of what would have been $25,000, are they super happy Do they come back for more? Do they refer you? Do they give you glowing testimonials?
Yeah, I don't think any client would look at it. I'm paying 35 and I would have paid 25. I think they're looking at it. And the response I get is they love it. Like they literally, they thank me for doing it. They enjoy the conversation up front. And I can't think of any pushback. I haven't had one client say to me, oh my goodness, you know, you're just trying to make more money. They just really, really enjoy the certainty of it all and the budget. And Jonathan, I've actually adapted in my own way your three steps that you use in your why, which is, I think you was on your podcast back in last November, but, you know, letting the client answer the value question for themselves, like, you know, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to do it now? And why do you want to do it with us? And I think that's so powerful. And as you go down that, you know, they'll fix the price for themselves. And so I think that's, you know, I love the dynamic. It's so easy. And I'm trying to think of examples where I've given the price and somebody said, oh, no, I don't think so. Like I think the process is the point, not the number that you arrive at mm-hmm. the end.
Right. Yeah. It builds tons of trust early and it allows you to ask questions that help ensure you will deliver customer satisfaction. If they're just like, you know, if you're like, oh, we're $200 an hour. Do you want us to start doing stuff? And they say, yeah. And you're like, okay, what do you want us to do? Not that you would do that, but just in general, in an hourly billing situation, it allows you to get to work before you understand what you're even trying to accomplish. Because all of these tasks, there's all these tasks like, oh, look at all these tasks to do. It's like, oh, well, let's start doing these tasks. But there's no necessity for a conversation about what's the goal. And so people tend not to talk about the goal. They tend to talk about much more low level sort of punch lists and requirements and things like that. And you don't usually get invited into a bigger picture conversation about what's the business outcome that you're looking to achieve here. And that's what the why conversation does. It helps them step back and share with you what their goals are so that in the course of the project, there's probably thousands of little decisions that you're going to make on their behalf, no matter whether you know what you're trying to do or not. You're going to make a lot of little decisions on their behalf. So if you know what the desired outcome is, in other words, if you know where you're driving to, you'll end up there even without having to have like a lot of collaboration about minutiae with the client.
100%. So, I think the other real key client benefit is communication throughout the project. When I mean, virtually every lawyer will have experienced the reticent client, doesn't want to phone you, doesn't want to talk to you. In our case, sometimes we'll go to the paralegal, not the lawyer. They're so mindful of the hourly rate that you get poor communication, you can't get to the best result. And I actually sell that. I go, you can phone me anytime you want. You know, after we agree on price, you know, phone me. I want you to. I want to know what's on your mind. Because if I know what's on your mind, I'm going to be able to get you where you want to get to at the end of the day. And I really like that. That's, you know, I believe that, you know, the approach that we're following is really important for all three stakeholders, not just the clients, not just the law firm and profitability, which, you know, we've talked a lot about, but for the individual lawyers, it is awful to have conversations after you've completed a file and you're trying to justify why you talked to the lawyer down the hall about something. And they're like, you weren't working on my file and you're trying to explain what actually they know more than I do. And it was really good that we both spoke. And trust me. And so those conversations just don't resonate with people. And it's so nice not to have them and to just be able to do, you know, great work for great clients.
Excellent. I'm not surprised to hear that, but I have heard from some folks in the space that it's I don't know if regulation is the right word, but there's rules around what you can promise. And I feel like I have heard that in some places. I don't know if this is like a United States thing or individual states thing where it's required that you track your hours, or that you can only, I'm trying to remember, but maybe you know, you're an expert. What are the industry specific regulations or challenges or compliance that you need to navigate by switching off of a bit billing hour, an hourly billing model, and going to perhaps a more outcome-based project kind of fees?
So we believe that, well, first of all, we do track our time, and we do that. There's a, and probably in most jurisdictions, there's a concept of taxation of lawyers' accounts. And there's a lot of factors that go into that, including whether you've agreed upon pricing. So, you know, a contractual arrangement, if you will. So we feel it's important to be law society compliant here, to continue to track the time we expend on files. But there's lots of work where attorneys don't, you know, routine residential real estate work. I think you'd find, I'm sure throughout the U.S., there'd be a lot of firms that don't track their hours. So I think you do it to have the data, if you will, to support your fee if it's called into question at the end.
Mm-hmm. Are you in the practice of sending your timesheets to the client, or that would only be something that if there was a problem and they requested them?
I can't think of an example being asked for a timesheet when we've had a fixed fee billing arrangement.
And it's not part of the system that you would provide them.
But I mean, and I think we would resist because it wouldn't be relevant to our fee arrangement, mm-hmm. whether they're entitled to it. But if they really wanted to see it, we probably would send it on. But it doesn't come up because it's, you know, if you've communicated well and you have an arrangement, then you have happy clients.
Sure. Yeah. Believe me, I've seen that firsthand. So, what does your why conversation look like? So with a software developer, when I would do that in the past, I would get to some really concrete outcomes. So you can get to some pretty concrete outcomes. It might not be a dollar amount. A lot of times it is a dollar amount that they're trying to achieve a transformation, and they believe I can contribute to it, which is why they're talking to me. So I want to find out what that outcome is. And in a B2B scenario, which is something, you know, you're B2B, then it's pretty, in my world, it was relatively easy to tie back my contribution to a goal that had numbers associated with it in some way. But not always. Sometimes it was a moonshot, and they were happy to invest $50,000 to potentially get a patent on a new mobile web process or something like that. So it's not like a definite bottom line ROI kind of thing, but it is something that they're, you know, it's like a big picture thinker who wants to invest in something. They see a window of opportunity, and it's worth 50 grand to them to get an expert to help ensure that it's going to go well. What kind of outcomes are your typical, you know, like what are some common outcomes that your buyers are looking for from an engagement?
It's kind of interesting because, you know, I think as people in business, we tend to focus on the financial side of what people are looking for. But the honest truth is that a lot of times what they're really looking at is the experience they're going to have. It's like why you go to Starbucks and you buy a coffee at Starbucks instead of at the local coffee shop where you might get it for half the price. People actually, I believe we sell experiences. We don't really sell legal services in the pure sense. Yes, they're looking to get something done. Yes, they're looking to buy that company or sell their company. Yes, they're looking to incorporate a company because they want to go into business. But I think they're really, when you dig down, you know, people are looking for they're looking for trusted advisors in our industry, and they're looking for people that they can have open conversations with and feel good about the experience and feel like that they've been successful. So I think there's a huge element of that in terms of what success looks like to them.
Yeah. I wish my lawyer had a subscription service. Like I probably haven't talked to him in a year. I just get an email from an assistant or whatever they're called with like my corporate paperwork for the year, sign this and email it back. And I wouldn't talk to him anywhere near all the time. I have no reason to like socialize with I like my lawyer, but he's not, you know what I mean? I'm not going to bother him. But there are definitely times when I would have liked to send an email or pick up the phone, ask a quick question, get an educated answer that I trusted. And I'm not even, you know, I think he charges $250 an hour. And, you know, for the 6 minutes that it would take, it's worth the money, but it's not worth the invoice and sending the payment and, you know, just like all of the, it's not a lot of friction, but it's enough friction that I'm like, I'll just Google it, you know? And it's, I feel like it's a missed opportunity. You know, I just feel like I would absolutely be paying him more money for a more frictionless experience of access to his expertise. That would be great. And I have my doctor's like that. I have a concierge doctor. I wish my lawyer was a concierge lawyer.
Yeah, I really believe in that. I think that we've created the culture around our firm where if you can pick up the phone and we answer off the top of our head, we're not sending you a bill. Mm-hmm. Like you can get that. That's part of our relationship and part of us defining whether there's scope of work to be done in which we are going to charge you. And we want people to phone us when they're thinking, you know, I'm about to enter into a new employment agreement with somebody. It's a little bit different. Is that okay? Or what do you think? And we'll go, hey, that sounds like a big deal. I think we should dig in a bit on that. You know, give us a bit of information. And then that sounds like something that will have value to you. Mm-hmm. So we've created an open door on that. And particularly with the companies like you're talking about where we host their corporate records and they naturally hear from us once a year, we build in the culture that, yes, please pick up the phone. Like maybe it's, and we get a lot of opportunities because they're not afraid to pick up the phone and get a bill for $50 for a 6 minute call.
Yeah. And the thing I want to stress though, is I don't care about the $50. It's the overhead. So it's just enough overhead and friction and annoyance that I would rather that I just won't do it.
Well, we feel the same. I feel the same. I don't want to send a bill for $50 because that's got to go through three or four different people to get out the door.
Right.
I don't want to do it either, just like the client doesn't want to get it. So we just call it out a little bit and say, we're not going to do that. Like mm-hmm. just pick up. So I think it's cultural too. And as I was alluding to before, one of the difficulties is there's a mentality that you should get paid for your time. It's like mm-hmm. going to work in a coffee shop and not get paid for the first half hour. That can't possibly be okay.
Mm. So, okay. That's a great question. So how does this boil, you know, since you've got 30 people working there, how does this trickle down into incentive structures, if any?
I think that's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I think we're still at a very early stage and we're working on how it's easy to see people's financial contribution, but sometimes it's harder to see what they're doing for system enhancement. And so I think it's a work in progress right now. I don't think we have it solved.
Interesting.
And we're 6 months in.
Right.
And so we've jumped in and right. now we're learning how to swim.
Great. So let's shift gears dramatically into, you know, you've got 40 years of experience in this space and all sorts of different size firms. What are, can you think off the top of your head some of the negative externalities of billing by the hour inside the firm? Because like that now I'm thinking about incentives and I've heard horror stories about people hoarding hours and like working 80 hour weeks and all these other things. Did you see any of that?
Well, I've seen it in the industry for sure. And there's a natural inclination of that your firm culture needs to deal with. But can you imagine, I mean, I think the youth are leaving our industry probably increasing numbers because of the grind. And because it's, you know, from that point of view, there's no scalability. You know, it's as money, you know, how many more hours am I going to work? And at some point there's some limit and then people burn out and go, this can't possibly be the right way to do it. So feel like we're making real inroads with the individual lawyers, creating an environment where they're incentivized to really not spend hours doing things, but to generate revenue at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's like, do this as fast as you possibly can without cutting corners. And then go home early if you want. Like, I don't care what you do. You know what I mean?
100%. Look at revenue in the end. Don't look at how many hours you logged in. It's a real grind in the larger firms. And I'm sure there's lots of that in Boston, which is close by to you, but where your expectations are, you know, grinding out 2,000 plus hours a year. But when you do the math, that doesn't leave much time for anything else. And it doesn't really allow you to spend, you know, doesn't really reward you for spending those, the 2000 hours, you know, in a profitable way. You just got to keep logging those hours.
2000 billable.
Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly why people end up working 60 hour weeks and 80 hour weeks, because they have to do a lot of stuff that's not billable. And what does that lead to? That leads to billing for stuff that maybe wasn't really, you know. Or another one that I've seen is like, oh, well, I was thinking about both clients at the same time. So double billing. And I don't know if, I think that is patently illegal in the legal space, or maybe illegal is the wrong term, but like an infraction at the very least. But I know software developers who proudly report that, oh, well, I wrote a piece of code that I could deploy on two different projects, so I charged them both. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
I think it's the problem when you charge them for the time you spent, because that's just dishonest. You know, as an example, if you incorporate a company and you devote your resources to having great systems so that you can do it efficiently, then, and you pick a price for that, then you're not really billing for the time to start with. And that feels fair. And I think maybe it was on one of your podcasts, I heard the example of why should the first client pay for all the development of the system, and the second and third and fourth clients kind of get it for free. And
then, yeah, the first client subsidizes all the subsequent ones. Ron Baker talks about that a lot too.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's so many ways to look at hourly billing that make no sense. It's wild. And so to have someone from the legal space that's jumped in and is seeing really good early results is fascinating and wonderful, because it feels to me like the last bastion of the one. I mean, my understanding of the history of the billable hour is that it originated in the legal area, and that it was deemed a bad idea at the beginning, and yet it caught on and then got a little bit, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit. This is mostly from Ron Baker, speaking of Ron Baker. But my understanding is that it became kind of codified, and what that does is creates a apples to apples comparison between, it creates a mercenary environment where expertise is, I think, devalued, like horribly devalued, and everybody's focusing on the wrong thing. Like, as a, just so to make that more concrete, the fact that that clients would be reluctant, would think to pick up the phone to call you and then not do it, that is a great example of why it's bad. Because in a service business, you should want your clients to pick up the phone and call you, you know, and to set up a structure where you're basically selling yourself like a cab driver, it's bonkers. But I, you know, obviously I recognize that it's the normal way, and there's a sort of consensual hallucination that it, in some areas, that it's the only way. And obviously it keeps me up nights talking about it, thinking about it.
Well, there's no doubt that there, when you listen to people that are the influencers or advisors in the legal industry, the clients are demanding the alternative fee arrangements. The percentages go up markedly every year. So I'm not an expert. I spend, time trying to understand it. But my guess is this, in the next, us having done what we've done, we're going to be more profitable in the next, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And then after that, the competitive forces, you're going to have to be able to price differently than the current system, or you're not going to be competitive. You know, with technology and everything driving you nowadays, the world shifting that way. And so we're just trying to get on the crest of the wave. And to be honest, I love the conversations with clients. It's so easy. And it's just a better experience for the lawyers, and for definitely for the clients, and for the law firm, it's a better experience as well. So all three stakeholders, and the pain points that you are dealing with, the further you get, the more layers of the onion that you peel back, the more you learn. I think if we're to talk in another year, we're going to have a different conversation, with the learning that's taken place in that year, because I think we're just at the beginning and just immersed in it.
Well, we should definitely keep in touch, because that my hope is that at that time you will start working on your book, Frank Fees, and we'll be able to have you back on the show and promote it.
Well, it's a little something, you know, as a side hustle, if you will, not so side. We've decided that the legal industry is ripe for change. And so we're taking what we're doing and we're on the cusp of turning it into a SaaS product to sell to legal firms. And
oh, good.
So we really believe that we're approaching it differently and we can make it simple enough that it will be, it will be something that can be implemented because it's got to be simple. As we've talked about, the cultural change is so significant in our industry, but if you can make it so that it's different than just trying to estimate how much time you're going to spend and you build the back end system that I've talked about, I think that there's a real, I think there'll be an appetite for it. We're excited about the, as I call it, the side hustle.
I love that. I try not to say it too much because it's kind of dark, but I see hourly billing as a cancer on professional services. And I picked that metaphor very specifically because it invades the whole firm at every level. Your thinking, your systems, your processes, everything is centered around the billable hour. And to get it out it can be a catastrophic event for the business. It needs to be carefully removed. So, you know, for somebody that's had like every system, every thought, every process is centered around hourly billing, it is not as simple as flipping a switch. I mean, I'm very impressed that you were able to, you know, that you didn't dip your toe in, you jumped in the deep end and were able to, swim, you know, right away. So the idea of having I tell the story often when I first had the kind of epiphany about hourly billing being nuts and stumbling across something called value-based fees, I was like, I went to the owner of the firm and I said, look, I have identified something that we need to talk about. And so we talked about it and he was like, I get what you're saying and I think you're right, but how would we switch? And I had no answer for that. And if there was a software, you know, I could imagine a legal firm thinking the same thing. And if there was a software package that systematized the process and gave them a raft, you know, a floaty at the deep end of the pool, I think that would be a boon. I think that would be huge. And I'm really, really glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, I'll keep you up to date. We're shooting for a launch in April and I've done a lot of work. But as you can imagine, just we're living the experience and trying to, you know, carry on the day job at the same time as do this and trying to put in, it's got to be easy. It's got to be usable because you can't get in the hard to do pile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so. That's great. All right. Well, where can people go to find out more about you and maybe they need your legal services or maybe they want to hear more about the side hustle?
Yeah. So for me, if you ever Google my name, there's not many of us in the world, Ligby, Leighdigby. So that's the easiest way to find me. If you Google the name, you'll find me. In terms of the new the SaaS product, it will launch under a slightly different name called AltFee. So you can find that at altfeeco.com.
AltFee.co.com. I'm sorry.
AltFeeco.com.
Okay.
Website to be up soon. So don't go too fast.
I love the name.
That's
love
where
it.
You find it. And super excited about that. Of course, compared to the legal industry, that's actually scalable.
Great. Fabulous. Well, this has been super fun.
Yeah, Jonathan, thanks so much. I don't want to be too sappy about it, but I find that, you know, I really love the area that you're in, how passionate you are. And just like me, you're jumping into the deep end and owning it completely. And so I've had the good fortune to be able to follow along in a number of your podcasts and learn lots from it. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Love it. Thanks very much. We absolutely have to stay in touch. All right, folks, that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark, and I hope you join me again next time for Ditching Hourly. Bye. Would you like to learn how to get paid what you're worth? How about selling your expertise and not your labor? What about making more money without working more hours? We work through all of this together in the pricing seminar. Registration starts soon, so head on over to thepricingseminar.com to add your name to the announcement list. That URL again is thepricingseminar.com. I hope to see you there.